Another football incident off the field that comes close to home. What do the Patriots do now? What does the NFL do now with Antonio Brown? On the hardwood, far from home, upset city in the FIBA World Cup. Plus, we'll try and get through a ho-hum week three of college football, and Saints fans can exercise the demons on Sunday when the Who Dat Nation travels to the West Coast. All these stories and more today, Wednesday, September the 11th, 2019.
It's not about who's not here. I've been saying that for a while. You guys are going to do your thing, but we have 12 guys that want to compete for America, just like every other country. It sucks that, you know, some of our country people don't feel that way about us, but we don't care. We wanted to compete, and we did.
Both Antonio and his representatives have made statements, and so I'm not going to be expanding on any of those. They are what they are. We've looked into the situation. We're taking it very seriously all the way through the organization. I'm sure there are questions, but I'm not going to be entering into a discussion about that today.
I don't really like to compare players. Obviously, they're both great players. They've had great college careers, and obviously Adrian's been doing it for a lot longer than Zeke has, but each of those guys has been top running backs in the league. Probably have a little bit of a different style, but both great players.
And a great good afternoon. How are you, Acadiana, and around the world? Thanks for dialing us up on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. My main man, CD, in the master control suite in the 237 Roof Studios. He's spinning the tunes, pushing all the buttons, and we got a busy guest list planned for you and yours. I'm Jordy Helpert, Studio 1B, and it's great to be with you. You heard some of the sound from the biggest stories in the country when it comes to sports. Bill Belichick talking about Antonio Brown, who now another incident, a lawsuit has been filed, this time by close to home, Brittany Taylor, a former LSU gymnast who's accused the New England Patriot wide receiver of sexually assaulting her on three separate occasions, twice in June of 2017 and for a third time in May of 2018. Antonio Brown's lawyer doing what they're supposed to do. They vehemently deny it. They're calling it a money grab, and they will countersue. Meanwhile, what do the Patriots do? They're not going to say anything. They're going to let the NFL investigate. Is the NFL going to use the commissioner's exempt list, which means Antonio Brown would be not able to play, but he would still be able to receive his paychecks until the investigation comes through. It's just one thing after another. There are some very telling text messages from Antonio Brown to the accuser. And it's just, I'm going to let it play out. Let the investigation play out. All I know is, enough to me is enough. If I were the Patriots, I never would have taken Antonio Brown, but hey, that's just me. But I'm tired of him. I'm tired of him. The other major story: the United States has been ousted from medal contention by France at the FIBA World Cup, failing to capture gold at the major international tournament for the first time since the 2006 World Championships. You heard Donovan Mitchell, the Utah Jazz, talking about it's not about who's not here, it's about who is here. Well, who is here? A bunch of slightly above average NBA players. The United States had won 58 consecutive tournament games in FIBA and Olympic competition with NBA players. Now the best the Americans could do now in China is finish fifth. But they are going home with a berth in the 2020 Olympics secured, but they'll have no medal. They got beat by Orlando Magic guard Evan Fournier, who had 22 points, and Utah Jazz center Rudy Gobert with 21 points and 16 rebounds. France wins it 89-79 in the quarterfinals this morning. They rallied from a 7-point fourth-quarter deficit to pull off the upset. The USA was favored by 8.5 to 9 points. There is no doubt, it's not arguable anymore, that the gap between basketball in the United States and basketball around the world has narrowed. But there's no way in God's green earth, if the United States puts their very best players on the court, that they lose a game. It's not going to happen. Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and on and on and on. James Harden, and on and on. It's not even close. But upset it was. On the LSU front, they're moving up the charts, and they're getting recognized along the way. One of the more interesting scenes in the Texas game, in the Texas win, Joe Burrow, late in the ball game, was turning to the fans of the Longhorns and waving his hands on a national radio show, national television show to boot. Here is Joe Burrow responding to the question of what's the wave all about?
Yeah, that was just a little wave. They had been talking some trash behind us all night, and I had enough of it for a little bit.
I kind of like that. Kind of like that a lot. Here's another one that I really, really, really enjoyed. You know, we talked about late in the ball game. LSU was up. There's a little over 3 minutes to go in the ball game, and you're thinking, what in the Sam Hill is LSU going to do? Here's Ed Orgeron explaining his conversation with Steve Ensminger and Joe Brady during the game and on the field. Those two up in the press box. What are they going to do with the lead with a little over 3 minutes left to play?
I said, hey, man, what do you think about 4 minute offense? He goes, no, we're going to pass the ball and go down there and score. I said, go ahead.
We're going to go pass the ball. We're going to go ahead. We're going to score. Okay. That is what I love about this LSU football team and their mentality now. And they have all bought in. And the fact that they've been successful has made the coaches buy in. And that's the most important thing. If they weren't executing, if they weren't putting up big numbers, if they weren't moving the sticks, then the coaches would get very, very conservative, particularly at that time of game with the score and the time left on the clock. But because they had executed, because they were successful, they played to win. They didn't play not to lose. And that's the mentality you have to have. The players have proven to the coaches, and I think that is a point of emphasis that's being overlooked. The coaches can say all they want. Yeah, we're going to spread it out. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're going to go three wide, five wide. We're going to hurry up, tempo, tempo. If it's not working, they're going to change, and they're going to go back to what they're most familiar with and most comfortable with. But LSU's been successful. Burrow's put up numbers, right? So they've proven to the coaches, and thus the Tigers are executing at an incredible, incredible clip. Let me tell you who's on our guest list today. Starting off in just a minute or two, Mr. College Football Tony Barnhart will join us. I'll ask him, Joe Burrow a Heisman Trophy candidate? I'll ask him, is LSU a national championship candidate? And we'll go through the games of a ho-hum SEC week with Tony Barnhart. Chris Truax will join us for his every Wednesday appearance at around 2:30. We'll go in the trenches, talk about that third and 17. John Hendricks will join us in hour number two from Forbes Sports and Canal Street Chronicles. We'll ask his opinion on Antonio Brown. Plus, the Saints get to exercise some demons this Sunday in L.A. when they take on the Rams. First time they'll meet them since the no-call in NOLA. And it wouldn't be Wednesday without Michael Huguenin. It's all coming your way. The Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. We are Acadiana Sports Station.
Are you looking for the latest updates on what is happening with the UL Raging Cajuns, LSU Tigers, New Orleans? Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Well, he's the busiest man in college football with the SEC Network. He writes for TMGCollegeSports.com, and he does some radio work on Radio 680, The Fan in Atlanta. We're thrilled, and always, when we get a chance to talk to Mr. College Football, Tony Barnhart. Tony, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
Jordy, I'm doing great. I'll tell you a little secret. Saturday night, I wanted desperately to be in a sports bar in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I don't care. I just wanted to be there to see what that was like, because I'll bet that was really cool.
All right, I got several questions. So question number one, when I say Joe Burrow, Heisman Trophy candidate, what say you?
I say absolutely a possibility, but let's see him go up against an SEC defense. I was so impressed. I was at home Saturday night, and my wife said, I said, watch this guy. He is as on fire as I have ever seen a quarterback. So precise, so methodical. And so, yeah, I think we can have that discussion, but let's have it again. I'm sitting here looking at the schedule. Okay. Let's have it again after they play Florida and Baton Rouge. That will be interesting.
All right. Fair enough. Question number two, LSU, a legitimate Final Four team. What say you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I wrote as much the next day. Is when you look at the way that they play, we know about the defense. With those many weapons, that they're absolutely legitimate. I have teams in tiers, Jordy, and the first tier of my teams, there are only three teams right now. It's okay. Alabama, Clemson, and Georgia. I think they stand alone. Oklahoma is trying to get on that tier. I think LSU made a good case for getting on that tier. Not ready to put them there yet, but they're awfully close.
All right. Tony Barnhart, kind enough to join us. Alabama's administration and fans complaining that they play too many games in the early day or early afternoon in the heat of September in the Deep South. What say you?
It's September. It's the Deep South. It's going to be hot. That's number one. Number two is the TV boys and girls put teams in those time slots, and if you don't like it, all you got to do is give them their money back. Okay, but there are contracts in place. Now, I did find it somewhat ironic that there were fans who were complaining that LSU was getting the beneficial treatment from the Southeastern Conference, because I thought that would be come as a surprise based on my LSU friends. that would come as a big surprise if they were getting preferential treatment from the SEC office.
Yeah, I want to know who those people are that think that. Seems like an interesting time. I know you've done work with CBS in the past, but my gosh, I know we as media people and fans can talk about games coming up, but it sure seems like a collision course with LSU and Alabama, where both could be undefeated if things continue to go the way they go. And they opted to put that game in the middle of the afternoon. Is that etched in stone, or could that be moved?
I don't think he can be moved because via the contract, I think there's only one doubleheader this year, and that's going to be used this next weekend with Georgia, Georgia Notre Dame. You would have to amend the contract because you'd have to have a game in the 3:30 Eastern time slot. So you would have to amend the contract.
All right, makes sense, Tony Barnhart. Tell me about what's going on in Knoxville, Tennessee, and is Phil Fuller just waiting for the president to say, get out of this chair and go down there and coach?
Yeah, you know, first of all, Tennessee's not very good. That's where you start. But I will say this, the two games they lost have been two completely different kinds of games. The Georgia State game, they lined up and they got their butts kicked on the line of scrimmage for 60 minutes, and that was embarrassing, okay? I know the guys at Georgia State, they work really hard, but that should not happen. The second game, Tennessee played better. They played harder. The fans showed up and gave a lot of support, but they let an inferior team hang around too long and got beat by blown coverage. So I don't buy this theory that Philip Fulmer wants to get out of the AD's chair and take over as head football coach. Because, Jordy, you and I have seen that. It does not end well. It never ends well. So I think they're just going to have to let Jeremy Pruitt coach his team. Here's the one qualifier I would give you, and it's this. If Philip Fulmer, as a former coach who knows how these things are supposed to work, if he finds out or believes – that the team has quit on this coach and this coach, this coaching staff, that's when you have to do something.
Yeah, I agree. It makes sense. It's a miserable week in the SEC, but a couple of interesting games. Kansas State at Mississippi State. Not a lot of people are talking about this one, but this is a sneaky good game, right?
You're exactly right. It's a sneaky good game. They've got, you know, the great Bill Snyder. Coach of Kansas State is gone. The new staff has come in. I don't know this staff, but what I hear, they're really good, and they played well in the early portions of the season. So this, yeah, particularly, we don't know if Mississippi State, if Tommy Stevens is going to be completely healthy to play quarterback. So now you got a situation where you're playing younger, inexperienced quarterbacks. I don't know. That's a game you need to keep an eye on.
I'm with you. That's an 11 o'clock start. They're not complaining in Starkville for an 11 o'clock start, but that's another story.
Bet it's going to be hot there, too, you know?
Yeah, I bet it is. But those cowbells, they're not like fans. I mean, they don't provide air. They just provide a lot of noise.
yeah.
A game that I was really interested in until, Florida at Kentucky. Kentucky loses their quarterback, but the backup wasn't all that bad against Troy. It seems to me, Tony, this game goes one of two ways. Florida gets ahead early and cruises, or Kentucky just hangs around, keeps it close, and we got a fourth quarter game.
And really, it'll depend on how Sawyer Smith played 3 years of football at Troy as their quarterback, played for Neil Brown. So the guy has got some ability. And I'll tell you this. Kentucky's got a big old chip on their shoulder. They got tired of hearing that they were going to fall off the face of the earth after winning 10 games last year. I think the Gators are too good defensively, okay? So I don't know that Kentucky's going to be able to score, like get into the 20s when it comes to points, and I think they'll have to do that. So that's why I like Florida in this game. You know, Felipe Franks, let's keep an eye on the Florida quarterback. He played well last week against the Mighty 11 from UT Martin. So let's see how he does against an SEC defense.
Your buddy Mac Brown is 2-0. He gets Wake Forest. Does he make it 3-0?
I think he's got a shot, but I tell you, Wake Forest, coached by Dave Clawson, has done a tremendous job there. This will not be an easy game, but I trade text messages with Mac once or twice a week, and he is absolutely thrilled with the sort of the resolve that his kids have shown. Beating South Carolina in Charlotte was a real big deal.
Yeah. No question. Tony Barnhart, I've got to ask, you've followed football a long time. That's why they call you Mr. College Football. Could you believe what you saw on your television set in Austin, Texas, an LSU offense that played to win, didn't play not to lose, 3rd and 17 with a lead, and they come out throwing the – could you believe that? What was Charlie Mack doing up in heaven?
What I loved about it, and I read this in the Advocate, and this was a great story. I mean, LSU is up 37-31. They've got the ball. They're on the 25-yard line. There's 3:59 left to go. 99% of the coaches in the world would run the ball, run the clock, make them use their timeouts, and try to run as much clock as possible. And Coach O calls up to Steve Ensminger and Joe Brady in the box and say, "Hey, guys, what do you want to do? We're going for it. We're going to score, and we're going to score right now." And they did. I mean, that one anecdote tells you everything you need to know. Because I had a conversation with Greg McElroy. I said, "McElroy, what's going to happen when it gets to be crunch time?" They're talking about throwing the ball, but what when it really gets to crunch time,
that's right.
do they turn conservative again? And he said, "It's a great question. We got our answer on Saturday night. That was something to behold." Because here's the thing, Jordy. Somewhere Saturday night, Odell Beckham was sitting in a hotel room screaming at the television
yes.
set, okay?
Yes.
You know he was. He said, "What in the world is this?
Why now? Why not
Why
back
now?
When I was there?" Tony Barnhart, you're the best. I know you're busy. We always appreciate the time. And let's get through this week, because next week ought to be a lot of fun.
All right, Jordy, take care.
All right, buddy, Tony Barnhart, Mr. College Football, kind enough to join us. That brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets with nearly over 60 of them in southern and central Louisiana. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, man, you can't shop right at all. In the Trenches, Chris Truax next.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, we welcome you back 33 minutes after the hour on this Wednesday, September the 11th. Hope you're having a fabulous day. Let's go where the games are won. That's the line of scrimmage brought to you by True Lodging RV Park right there on Highway 27 in Hackberry, Louisiana. Perfect for all you fishermen, you hunters, as well as you bird sanctuary lovers. But how about those of you men and women in the liquid natural gas business? There's jobs in the area. And, boy, if you're looking for a place to stay, True Lodging RV Park is perfect for you and yours. Wi-Fi and laundromat, green space for your pets. The lots are 28 by 60 for extra room, and it's just centrally located. There's all kind of things around it, so it's a great place to go. That is True Lodging RV Park in Hackberry, Louisiana, where we find former LSU offensive lineman, former college football assistant coach, and now just a big old fan, our friend Chris Truax. Chris, good afternoon, buddy. How are you?
Jordy, I'm fantastic, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm terrific. I've got to get your thoughts. What was the atmosphere like in Austin, Texas this past weekend?
Well, I tell you, I'm very blessed to have Tom Herman's a personal friend of mine. And Tom was gracious enough to let me sit in his tickets and to also have a field pass. So, you know, the energy was pretty electric, even during pregame. You know, I was on the field in the Texas end zone, and, boy, I mean, it was a hot, hot day. Every bit of 110 on that field. So, you know, I felt for both teams and staffs all the way around. But it really got hot when LSU comes out there in pregame, and here comes all the DBs taking their light little stride around the field with their shirts off. and just talking a little smack to the Texas wide receivers. And I thought, man, we're fixing to have a little pregame shuffle going on here. And, you know, fortunately, you know, LSU came up on the top end of this deal as far as, you know, I know we're DBU, but we gave up plenty of yards passing, and I'm glad they gave up more yards passing.
Yeah, you know, what I wanted to see more than anything, the heck with the defensive backs and the wide receivers, I wanted to see Chris Truax going one-on-one with the Undertaker who was on the sideline. That's what I wanted to see.
You know what, Jordy, I was right there next to him, to be honest with you. He was taking pictures, seemed like a very gracious guy. People were coming up there. I'm just not into, you know, in the wrestling deal, but the guy was, he seemed like a first class, you know, Texas fan, and it was very, very gracious to all the fans that wanted to take pictures with him.
Chris Truax, kind enough to join us. Coach O talked about, and let's start on the defensive side of things. That's where the trouble was. He said he talked about a cage rush. You're a football coach. What in the Sam Hill is a cage rush? Seems to me like they're trying to keep somebody in a cage, like keep them contained. Is that what that is?
Well, you know, when you talk about the cage, you're talking about basically the cylinder of the body that you want to stay right through the midline of the defender's body, because you guys know as well as I know, Ellinger likes to run and beat you with his feet. So they didn't want the defensive lineman basically to play a half a man scheme, either on the right shoulder tip or the left shoulder tip. They wanted him through the midline, the cage of his body. So if Sam wanted to escape to the right or that left, that defensive lineman could disengage from the offensive lineman and try to make the tackle. So that's kind of what he was talking about, just kind of the middle of the body. So that's why you didn't like. I know we got four sacks. We got four sacks, you know, on the quarterback, and there could have been more. But for that reason, those defensive linemen going to the midline of those offensive linemen's body, just they didn't have a lot of freedom to work a really solid pass rush move.
Look, on the flip side, the offensive line did a yeoman's job, gave Joe Burrow protection. He got rid of the ball quickly. I've never seen an LSU offense like it, Chris. Never.
You know, me either. Truly prolific. And, you know, I know we talked about it last week. First of all, what I'd like you to see this week is our running backs do a better job of blocking consistently. Not trying to cut block and getting traffic behind the offensive line or in the quarterback's way. I'd like to really have a big fundamental with better blockers here in the next few weeks before we start conference play. And I know we talk about the right tackle a little bit too. And I'm really pleased with four of our five linemen right now. I think our right tackle spot might be the enigma right now, but we really need to find it as Florida's 3 weeks away, I guess, you know.
Yeah. Ed Ingram, we're supposed to find out some news about him this week. Coach O hinted it might be some good news that might solidify. Who knows? Too long of him being out. Who knows?
Well, I assume he's been training. You know, I sure hate for him. There's no way he can get on the field if he has not been training or been able to be sitting in meetings or meeting with one of the analysts and doing what he needs to be done to get himself back on the field. Because, you know, he might be in physical shape and so forth, but getting that mental rep and getting the speed of the game back, you know, and getting in football shape, you know, carrying an extra 30 pounds with your helmet, your shoulder pads, and, you know, all your body weight with all that extra gear and that heat, it takes a little bit to get conditioned to as well. So if they could get him in versus Northwestern and Vanderbilt and Utah State, give him really 3 weeks under his belt, you know, it would be a blessing.
It would. This is Chris Truax, brought to you by True Lodging RV Park in Hackberry, Louisiana. Plant workers, fishermen, hunters, bird sanctuary lovers. It's the perfect place to lodge and to relax and enjoy. Take me into the coach's mindset. You know, little under 4 minutes left to go in the game. You've got a lead. You're on the road. I would think 90% of coaches would run it, run it, try and take as much time off the clock, try and expunge their timeouts. Coach O, we played a clip earlier. He said he called up to Steve Ensminger and Joe Brady. He said, we're going to do the four-minute offense. He goes, nope, we're throwing it. We're going to score, and we're going to win the thing. I mean, that's unusual.
You know, Les would have ran it right there. No doubt it would have been a play in between the center and guard, and they would have got three or four and then punted it and played defense. And, Jordan, you know, you bring up a great point, because going in right there at the end of the first half, Texas ran three offensive plays with three passes and burned about 15 seconds of clock, punted it to LSU, and LSU was able to get that touchdown going in. So I thought that was poor coaching. You know, if you would have told me LSU at that time was going to convert a 3rd and 17 also, I wouldn't have seen that. But it looked like a Big 12 game. It looked like there was no defense and there was just nothing but offense out there. And, you know, my hat's off to the LSU fans and the band and so forth, because, partner, they were about sitting outside of the stadium. You know, I didn't like that, that lack of respect towards our fans either. But as far as the coaches, you do what you do. And you know, watching the dynamics on the sideline with Joe and during the pregame stuff, he is just a composed young man that the guys feed off of.
Yeah, he's quite the leader. Chris Truex joining us. Yeah. Are you concerned about the LSU defense?
Jordy, you know, offensively, we ran 68 plays. Offensively, Texas ran 85 plays. That is a lot of football for a defense, playing man-to-man coverage and doing a lot of pass rushing and so forth. You know, and so I'm not worried about our defense. Texas is a damn good football team. I mean, we beat they're top 10. I can't believe they're not in the top 10 right now. They're a top 10 program without a doubt, and will play Oklahoma for the Big 12 championship or win it outright. But the 85 plays, you know, I think our offense, if we could stay on the field a little bit more and run about 75 plays, and the defense, you know, gets down to about that 65. 70 play mark. That's what you look for as a player, kind of as a defensive lineman and so forth. You're too deep. You try to get about 50 plays, and you back up, tries to get about 25, and everybody's kind of fresh. So them cramping up, and it was as hot as it was, and the environment it was, and as hard as those guys are playing, and as much man coverage as you're playing, you know, there's going to be some penalties. Which, heck, there was only six called, and. You know, but I thought overall, no, I'm not worried about our defense at all. I know everybody's not happy, but give some credit to the quarterback at Texas for moving the chains.
Yeah. Yeah, very good team, very good quarterback, no question. Takes us now to this weekend. Northwestern State, the Demons, they're just a bad football team. This is what is the goal? I guess if you have a bruise or a hangnail, you're sitting this one out, right?
You know, Jordy, I hoped we get, you know, we got these vaunted freshman class that you've got four games you can play and still be redshirted. I mean, what a blessing. This, to me, is a game.
Yeah,
I have talked to Coach Laird in Northwestern. Looks like they started off the season kind of in a tough situation, and this season's going to be a tough situation for them. But, you guys, you don't, I think you stay on rhythm a little bit, maybe first quarter, first half. I know Coach O is being, you know, politically correct by saying being a tight ball game, but it should be over with early, and we should see a lot of newcomers play this Saturday. At least I'm hoping. I hope it's not a dogfight this Saturday. I'm not anticipating a dogfight, but you're going to get Northwestern's best shot because, right? You know how that deal is. Little brother's coming to town and wants to bounce around big brother, and they might kind of be a punching bag for a little bit, and they're going to turn it on and turn it off, you know?
Yeah, I hope Miles Brennan. Look, I'm a big fan of Joe Burrow. I believe in him, but people ask me, well, doesn't he need to get stats to stay in consideration? Not in these kind of games. These kind of games don't count. He's got plenty of games down the road where he's going to have his opportunity. So let's get Miles Brennan in. Let's put the Peter Parrish kid in and let him play a little bit.
Let's see what these young freshman running backs can do as well, too. You know, I mean, I know they were highly recruited, yeah, highly coveted kids, but man, it was the Edward St. Hilaire show here this past Saturday. We had a good, consistent game. Just like for his blocking consistency to be better.
So, how quiet did it get in Austin after the Tigers put the kibosh on them? What was that like?
Let me tell you this: it was tough. I had to wear a neutral gender shirt, okay, because we were sitting in the stands on the 50-yard line right there, and it was myself and Blake Miller, another ex-Tiger, and we were nothing but orange around us, and we couldn't be too loud or anything. Matter of fact, Blake's son hollered and hooted when LSU scored the first touchdown. And I tell you what, if eyes were laser beams, son, it was over with right there. So it was. I can tell you this, Jordy, for their stadium to be 102,000, it's not very loud. It's just not very. It's just a different environment, crowd, a different structure. Yeah. All to it. A good example. You know, the game started at 6:30. You know, we got down there by 4 o'clock, and it took us maybe 15 minutes to get to where we needed to be. Well, you know that in Baton Rouge, if you left 4 o'clock mm-hmm. for a LSU Alabama matchup or whatever, you're not getting to the stadium. You know, one of those deals. So it's just a different mindset in Austin.
Right.
And I know it's important to them, and they got about a $250 million facility they're building. And anyways, they're good staff, and they do a great job, and I wish them the best in the Big 12. I'm glad that game's passed us, so.
Yeah, the best picture I saw was a picture of Alec Box Stadium, and it said underneath it where the UT band will be for the LSU Texas game in 2020. Going to put them outside at Alec Box Stadium, so I can't wait for that rematch next year. That ought to be fun.
I'm with you. I mean, you know, I don't know if it's an SEC rule that you've got to put fans at a certain spot, a band at a certain spot, but we're usually pretty generous to. You know, opposing teams in Tiger Stadium. But Texas, yeah, it was pretty disrespectful, I thought, especially where they put our
Not that
fans.
One.
Yeah, yeah, so that's right. So I'll be looking forward to next year as well, too.
All right, Chris Truex, we got a breather here. Then we head to Vanderbilt. Never take an SEC opponent lightly, but got three winnable games and then Florida, so just got to stay healthy. Let's play a lot of kids this week, and let's, as we always say, let's win the line of scrimmage.
Amen, brother. You got it, Jordan. Appreciate the call.
All right, buddy. You take care. Safe travels. That is Chris Truex, brought to you by True Lodging RV Park right there, a 49-pad RV park on Highway 27 in beautiful Hackberry, Louisiana. Wi-Fi, laundromat, a green space for your pets. The lots are huge. They're extra room. It's great for all the plant workers in the natural gas business, the fishermen, the hunters, the bird sanctuary lovers. If you just want to get out, get away from the bright lights and get out in the country, it's great. True Lodging RV Park, Hackberry, Louisiana. We're back to wrap up hour number one next.
All the best guests join the Jordy Holtberg Show. If you missed an interview, you can check it out on demand at 1037thegame.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, welcome back. Peterbilt of Louisiana. Excellent service, excellent trucks, very low maintenance. The Tigers travel to road games. They bring their equipment thanks to a Peterbilt truck. They've got locations in Lafayette, Lake Charles, Baton Rouge, and New Orleans. Peterbilt is the standard bearer when it comes to heavy-duty trucks. They just are. And the reason is because they've been the industry leader ever since they've come into existence in 1939. They've maintained that enviable position as the class of the industry by concentrating on delivering high-performance, low-maintenance, and extremely durable vehicles that pay off in low operating costs, driver productivity, and high resale value. You know, it's a dream of every trucker to own a Peterbilt. Yes, indeed. Golly, two games, two wins, an SEC leading 410.5 passing yards per game, 50 points per game, a quarterback who leads the nation in touchdown passes, a quarterback who is second in the nation in passing efficiency, and three receivers ranked in the SEC's top six for yards per game. And LSU thinks they can get much better. Joe Burrow said, we still left points on the board in both games we played. There were three opportunities to score touchdowns at Texas that we didn't execute well in the red zone and ended up kicking a field goal. We left 14 to 17 points off the board. Wow. If they ever get it going. Look, this has been great, okay? And nobody's ever said that the Big 12 plays defense. Texas was very physical. I can tell you that much. We haven't gotten to the SEC yet. So, again, Ed Orgeron says, tune out the noise. The noise is unbelievable. But you can't feed into what everybody's saying, whether it's good or whether it's bad. That's the cliche, but that's what you got to do. So, you know, the first defense LSU is going to face is when Florida comes to town. Plain and simple. But at least LSU brings you something. Faster tempo. More plays. He's the first LSU quarterback in history to complete 20 or more passes in five straight games. That's dating back to last season. He's got a very improved wide receiver core. And you know what? They're even thinking about moving Stephon Sullivan back to wide receiver because they haven't targeted him yet at the tight end spot. So that's been Thad Moss. So they're trying to get Stephon Sullivan back on the field, a bigger target. So it's kind of scary to think what's going. And look, wide receivers get better when they know the ball might come to them. That's just plain and simple. They run the routes better. They run them faster. They get open. And the good thing is they're catching passes. So it's, again, it's just a small sample size. But so far, what else could you ask for? What else can you ask for? You can't ask for anything more. Now you just want to do it against the teams that you need to do it against that you know are going to put up a bigger fight in the game. And that's when you get to the SEC. That's when you have Florida and Auburn and Alabama and Texas A&M and Mississippi State. So a long way to go, but a great sample size. And again, you play everybody. If you don't feel 100%, you sit them out. You sit them out. No Chaseon, no Lawrence, no, you know, you don't need them. This is when you make your other players happy. This is when you make a John Emery and a Davis happy. You give them the ball. You give it to them a lot. You get Trey Palmer in the game, Devontae Lee in the game, and you get them the ball. And you put Miles Brennan in, and you play him a lot. You play him a lot. You go home with it. You get it over with. You get a big win, and then you get ready for the next one. Opener of the SEC on the road in Nashville against Vanderbilt. Our number one is history. Hot topics, Saints talk, more college football talk, all coming your way. Our number two, the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans.
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Helfrich.
All right, hour number two, and away we go. It's Hump Day, Wednesday, September the 11th, the year 2019. We'll have some Saints talk with John Hendricks coming up. Michael Hugenin of The Athletic will join us for his normal Wednesday time slot. On this day in history, and some birthday wishes all coming your way. But we start things off every day at this time of day as we take our walk around the sports water cooler. CD, button please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Now, Clint, I know we always talk about sports, but I saw this and I just had to get your opinion on it. A guy in the United Kingdom got a speeding ticket. And it was going to cost him $120. He was so hell-bent and determined that he was innocent that Richard Keedwell, 71 years old, has spent 3 years and nearly $37,000 in an effort to clear his name on a ticket that was allegedly stating he was driving 35 miles per hour in a 30-mile-an-hour zone, speed zone. $33,000. Just pay the $120 and get it over with. CD, what are we talking about here?
We're talking about a guy that definitely has a little too much time on his hands, in my opinion, because the guy needs to realize it's a 120-pound fine. That's not the way you want to go out. Just pay the fine and move on. This isn't like NFL players. They have a right to complain about some of the fines that are levied upon them. Mind you, I think DeAndre Hopkins is going to get a much bigger fine than $120.
Wow. Yeah, I think so, too. That was he's got a career after football. I mean, I think Vince McMahon has already written his name down.
He definitely has written his name down. Now, did he write his name down for the XFL or the WWE? That's the million-dollar question. But, Jordy, flipping on over.
I have to ask you this. I got to ask you this real quick. If I could have gotten you on the field, what would you have done if you had stood right next to The Undertaker at the LSU-Texas game? How fired up would you have been for that?
Jordy, I would have been beyond fired up if I was out there. I mean, he was out there at College Game Day, pyro, smoke, and all. I'd pretty much be in shock and awe of The Undertaker just being out there, because now that he's not necessarily as much of a professional wrestler, he's out there from time to time. Seeing him, like, just out of character, it's a little weird. But trust me, Jordy, I would get a selfie, no doubt about it.
If he had the black hat and the black leather coat on and those eyes, that was a scary dude. All right, go ahead. Next.
Oh no, Jordy, like I'd agree with you if it's the black hat. But then again, I grew up watching wrestling a little bit later time, early 2000s, whenever he was the Undertaker with the motorcycle and the jacket. Like I wouldn't have cared less. As the Undertaker, let's take the picture and let's enjoy the moment. But of course, the biggest headline of them all, Jordy, is Antonio Brown, NFL reportedly considering putting him on the commissioner's exempt list, which would make him ineligible. The question to you is, does AB play another down?
Wow. Man, I really don't know. This is, you know, the cryotherapy and the helmet, that's one thing. Sexual assault is a whole another deal, and it's a very serious matter, obviously. I don't know if he will or won't. Look, the girl used to be an LSU gymnast, so it's kind of near and dear to our heart. But for any woman, I mean, it's just trouble seems to find this guy. And I all kidding aside, the psychological evaluation needs to be taking place with this guy. We got to figure out what's going on. He seems to be bipolar. They say he's happy 1 minute, and then on the flip of a coin, he's sad and depressed. And there's something amiss with Antonio Brown.
Oh, there definitely is something amiss. It's just wild to see everything that's been going on with him over the last several weeks. But sticking with the NFL, because this is just a wild story, Jordy, about the Cleveland Browns. As a fan, that got banned for life for pouring beer on a Titans player and in connection to the incident. And apparently, the guy that's possibly going to be banned hasn't been to the stadium since 2010.
Oh, no. Oh, no. One of those grandfather hand your ticket down from one family member to another, maybe?
No, I believe the guy's still alive. It's just the fact that it's in his name.
Wow.
Probably was like, you know what, dude? I got other things going on. You go to the game kind of situation.
You take the game, yeah. Well, hey, then the other guy skates out of that thing. He can put on the Bobby Valentine fake mustache and just walk in and sit down and throw. Well, you know, I mean, what the heck? But don't throw beers on players. Come on, stop all that.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, and it's just another log on the fire that is the Cleveland Browns. And it felt like everything was turning around for them, and now we're here again talking about them just not exactly being the best. And not exactly the best, Jordy, is without a doubt what's going on with Team USA basketball. 68-game win streak snapped in the FIBA World Cup quarterfinals to, of all teams, France. Not exactly the best look for them.
All I have to tell you is this. You know what player played the second most minutes for Team USA?
Who was that?
Harrison Barnes.
Oh.
That's our D. Harrison Barnes. I mean, that's our D team. So the 2020, they got their opportunity to go and compete in the 2020 Olympics. Let's send our A team there and blow people away. I just saw this, by the way. Condolences to Oklahoma State.
T. Boone Pickens, the
billionaire oil tycoon. He died today at the age of 91. Listen to this. He loved Oklahoma State football so much. In the year 2006, he donated $165 million to the athletic program, the largest single gift in NCAA history. How about that?
That is absolutely wild to see the fact that, you know, T. Boone Pickens passed away, and apparently this has come from Brett McMurphy of The Athletic, mentioning the fact that Oklahoma State is going to have a decal the rest of the year honoring T. Boone Pickens, passed away at the age of 91 earlier today.
And, you know, there's 6 degrees of separation. Les Miles was coaching at Oklahoma State. He knew T. Boone very, very well. So our thoughts and prayers to the Pickens family. I wonder how much he left in his will to Oklahoma State. Well, we may never know.
You can about imagine there's something in place where it's like X amount of dollars will go to Oklahoma State every year. Like just a nice round number, $100,000 a year every year to – Until it reaches like $2 million or somewhere along those lines after he passes away, type situation.
Who knows? There's your hot topics for the day. Brought to you by Cajun Chef Hot Sauce, the best hot sauce on the planet, in my opinion, because the Biart family for nearly 90 years puts together the finest spices, the finest peppers. Boom, there it is, Cajun Chef Hot Sauce. Do yourself a flavor. Bring a little bottle with you wherever you go, because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef hot sauce on it. We'll talk Saints and NFL with John Hendricks next.
Hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Holtberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, we're getting ready for week 2 of the NFL. More news off the field. John Hendricks, Forbes Sports, Canal Street Chronicles, joins us once again. John, good afternoon. How are you and your thoughts of that Saints nail biter of a win on Monday night?
Hey, good afternoon to you. Nail biter about comes to mind. That's one of the crazier things I've seen in the Superdome. You know, I think the last crazy thing might have been against the Browns and how that all transpired. And then, you know, in terms of craziness too, the Redskins game where they rallied back and won it in overtime. So, look, there for a moment, it was all party, and then it wasn't, and it was like, oh my gosh, they're really going to lose their 6th straight, and somehow they pulled it off, and somehow Drew Brees got it done. So, you know, 1-0, get a big monkey off the back, and they needed that in the worst way possible.
Yeah, you've got the Rams this weekend, then Seattle, then the Cowboys come back to the Superdome. So I don't know if anybody has a tougher four-game start to the regular season than the Saints do, but you mentioned Breeze. It's the familiar characters, Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara. Everybody expects them to perform. Perform they did. But defense, wow, despite six sacks, they've got some improving to do.
Yeah, specifically we're talking run defense. I mean, there's a lot of concern there. And, you know, I don't know if you could say, Let's just chalk that up to not having David Onyemata and Sheldon Rankins. But, you know, you get Onyemata back after this week. I don't know if that'll single-handedly fix the problems. You know, it's interesting. The Saints were showing a ton of blitz looks. And, I thinking through the course of the game, put it out there on Twitter, I'm like, I don't know if I remember them sending this much pressure in a while, especially under Dennis Allen. So they had some interesting rush looks. They were, you know, in the trenches, it wasn't really where they were getting beat. It was on the edges, the flats, you know, linebackers, they weren't taking the right angles or not getting tackles down in the first contact. I mean, you know, that's things they obviously got to clean up, and, you know, you just hope that this defense doesn't regress because they need them to come up big.
No question. The run defense, the most disappointing aspect. They were so good a year ago at stopping the run. We'll see what they can do coming up Sunday. The Rams present a problem, obviously. There's history involved in this thing. It's funny that the NFL scheduled the game out in L.A. and not in the Superdome after what happened in the NFC Championship game. What were the keys then to beating the Rams, and are they the same keys now here today to try and get a win on the road?
Well, I mean, look, you know, it's you asked Sean Payton. This is obviously a different team on both sides of the front. You know, some of the familiar faces are gone. Some are still there, obviously. But, you know, it's a regular season meeting. I think the media and everybody's going to overhype this game just because of what transpired last year. But, you know, maybe some bad blood will boil over a little bit. And obviously, if you're the Saints, I think you want some revenge here. But look, I think the game plan's still the same type of things, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're going to have a talented array of receivers that you're going to have to defend against, you know. So, again, you looked at some of the miscommunication that happened in the Texans game. Specifically, what comes to mind for me was the DeAndre Hopkins touchdown. Miscommunication, Lattimore's late onto the field a little bit, and Marcus Williams is playing so far off. He ends up being solo coverage. I mean, it was as easy touchdown as you can get for Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins. So, look, I'm looking at some things like that. I think defensively, this is where we have the big question marks. Offensively, I know they're going to be able to move the ball. It was good to see Ted Ginn Jr. step up into the mix. I think Jared Cook might be a guy that's featured more prominently here. And that run game is no joke.
I'm with you. John Hendricks, Forbes Sports, Canal Street Chronicles. When you mention the Rams, you got to mention defense, Aaron Donald. The Saints did Ryan Ramczyk in particular, did a magnificent job against J.J. Watt of the Texans. He didn't make a tackle, never touched anybody for the first time in his NFL career. But Aaron Donald presents another problem, doesn't he?
Yeah, Aaron Donald's a guy on his own. And I think I was watching some of the stuff against the Panthers. They were putting three guys on Aaron Donald. I mean, that's just how much attention that he begs when you face him. And, look, I mean, you know, a lot of that was blown into play last year when they met in the regular season that, oh, they have Ndamukong Suh and Aaron Donald. They've got all these talented pass rushers. I think they had just acquired Dante Fowler. And they kept Breeze pretty clean in the pocket. And, look, I think you'll see similar results here. You know, again, Breeze is probably going to take a little bit of pressure, but I think it's more indicative of the Saints to say, well, let's get the ball out a little bit quicker. Let's just try some things that's going to disrupt somebody like Aaron Donald. But, you know, look, it was really encouraging to see Ryan Ramczyk hold his own and then some against J.J. Watt because, you know, last time they played Houston in Houston, that streak didn't do too well.
No, that's why he's up in the radio booth now doing a really much better job there than he did on the field against the Texans. John Hendricks, Forbes Sports, Canal Street Chronicles. I mentioned it. A lot of action on the field. One name continues to come up off the field, and that's Antonio Brown, who took his first practice with the New England Patriots today. This was a day after his former trainer, Brittany Taylor, who happened to be just a few years ago an LSU gymnast. She filed a civil lawsuit in the Southern District of Florida accusing Antonio Brown of sexually assaulting her on three occasions. There are some well-documented text messages that have been released that he apparently theoretically sent to her. You cover the NFL. What are your thoughts on Antonio Brown? What should the Patriots do? What is the commissioner going to do?
Well, I mean, look, you know, obviously you can't take a situation like this lightly ever. I mean, you know, there's too much that's going on. And, you know, I think the emphasis is a little bit lopsided in some aspects where we're going to punish players for maybe doing PED, substance abuse, and something along that line is a lot more harsh. And then when it comes to situations like this, they take their time, find out, and, you know, you don't really see some of those penalties come to fruition somewhat. You know, Kareem Hunt was a prime example. He got suspended, what, 8 weeks or eight games for his role and such. And Tyreek Hill's a different story. But, you know, specifically about Antonio Brown, but obviously there's evidence there. The NFL is going to do their own investigation. It looks like the authorities are getting involved to do their investigation. And, look, I mean, Brown is a guy who just cannot, for the life of him, stay off of the spotlight. And, you know, you wonder the way everything transpired. Was it kind of a coup or something that just felt staged? I mean, just to end up with the Patriots right then and there, he doesn't post on social media. He doesn't act a fool or anything. Yeah. And then this comes out. I mean, it's just a crazy saga of events. And, you know, the NFL is definitely going to have to handle this carefully because they've had plenty of blowback over the years with other similar cases or different cases. And obviously everyone you got to take seriously. So something to keep on monitoring for sure.
It directly affects the NFL. It does. Do you believe that Roger Goodell will place Brown on the commissioner's exempt list, which would mean Brown won't be counted on the Patriots' active list while the league investigates the allegations? You talked about it. Sometimes they drag these things out and make it a long, drawn-out process. This is a very serious accusation. Is that something the NFL should do, or will the NFLPA even allow something like that to happen?
I mean, look, I think that, you know, they're going to have to look at all the options, right? And obviously, you know, information comes on is that apparently the league or the Patriots didn't know anything about this prior to this. But again, it's just not a good look, right? I mean, anybody that's accusing a player of rape and then you got all right. this evidence and all this stuff that's coming out. I mean, look, it is not a good look, and it's a continuous look that the NFL has to kind of go through. And you go back to other things like the whole anthem controversy and all this other good stuff. I mean, look, at the same time, you've got a lot to figure out here, and I think they're going to obviously do that due diligence. But if I've learned anything, you know, I mean, it took them, I don't know how many months, 3-4 months just to suspend David Onyemata for one game because of the marijuana allegations and the marijuana situation. So, look, I don't think it'll be something super quick and swift, but at the same time, I feel like they're going to try to get this done in a quicker fashion than some of the other things.
He is John Hendricks. I guess the one thing the Patriots have in their favor in this thing is they have to go down to Miami and play the Dolphins, who've already said they want players. Players want out. They stink. They're tanking for Tua, so I guess that's the silver lining of a dark cloud.
Yeah, complete opposite of last year, right? They had the Miami Miracle, and then everything in the offseason happened. Just it's nuts. But, yeah, Dolphins easily right now look like probably the team in 2019 that's most in trouble. So maybe they'll figure it out, but, man, that's just not encouraging. And the division where the Patriots almost assuredly are going to win again.
Again, by leaps and bounds, it's terrible. The Bills, the Jets, oh, God, they're so fortunate. I know it's only Wednesday, and we just got finished playing on a Monday, but I got to get your thoughts on the outcome of the Saints versus the Rams in L.A. on Sunday night. Or Sunday late afternoon,
I think, again, this is overblown a lot more than what it is, and I get it because of the way things transpired and the rule changes that go into effect. But, look, I feel good about this Saints team, and especially in pressure situations. Look, I think they know how to score and they know how to move the ball. You know, you go back to last year, they really did put a good hurting on them in the beginning of the championship game. And again, Dan Arnold makes that catch. It's a little bit different. So, look, I think this is going to be a good close matchup, but I'm going to take the Saints. I think take them by about 4 points. I'm thinking something like a 31-27. It would sound about right to me.
Sounds good. John Hendricks, Forbes Sports, Canal Street Chronicles, amongst the multitude of media outlets that he contributes to. We always appreciate your time and your candor, buddy. Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your week.
All right, you too. Thanks so much for having me.
I will take a time out here. When we come back to the college game, it's hump day. That means Huguenin talking college football here on the Jordy Helfrich Show, brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, you can't shop right at all. Back on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, Acadiana's number one sports station.
Guess what day it is?
It's time to break down the biggest storylines in college football this week with Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. What's up, Michael?
Mike. What day is it, Mike?
Hump day!
Well, he called it a week ago. He said LSU was the better team and LSU would win, and the Tigers did. Michael Huguenin, the genius that he is, joins us yet again for week three of the college football season. But we go back to week number two. You watched LSU Texas. What a thriller. Is Joe Burrow on your list of potential Heisman Trophy candidates?
I don't know yet, but, I mean, I think he played exceedingly well. And I think I thought LSU was going to win. I didn't think they would be that wide open offensively. Turned into a shootout, and I didn't expect that either. Burrow obviously played at an extremely high level. So did Sam Ellinger. So it was an entertaining game to watch if you didn't care who won. But, yeah, another performance like that, and Ellinger's going to be up there. I mean, you're fighting against public perception in a way that, okay, an LSU quarterback, let's get serious. Can he continue to do this? Because no LSU quarterback's done this in a long, 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 long time. And Lawrence is out there, and Tua's out there, and Jonathan Taylor's out there. But, yeah, if I'm an LSU fan, I'm extremely comfortable with my quarterback, and I cannot remember the last time LSU fans were able to say that.
Mike, are you concerned about LSU's defense, or was that just one of those games where you had a hot quarterback and it just offense ruled the roost?
I think it's a little bit surprising that the defense gave up that much passing yards. You know, Texas's corners were expected to be a problem this year, and they were. I would argue that if LSU's corners probably gave up maybe 100, 150 more yards than they thought. And going forward, though, you look around the SEC, how many quarterbacks are going to be that productive in one game against LSU? Obviously, Tua has the opportunity to do that. Maybe Kellen Mond, though he certainly didn't play very well against Clemson. Yeah, that's mildly troubling and mildly surprising. But at the same time, for the first time, I mean, think about it. If LSU was in a shootout that they won, and that never happened. So that's the positive aspect of that game. LSU showed that, hey, our defense might not be razor sharp every time out. And in the past, that meant LSU was losing. Well, this year it doesn't mean they're losing.
Yeah. Michael Huguenin and The Athletic, kind enough to join us. This is the first weekend without a ranked matchup since week 7 of 2017. What happened that weekend? 7 ranked teams lost, 5 lost as favorites, including 3 as favorites of 16 or more points. One of those big favorites which lost was Clemson. And Clemson's at Syracuse on a Friday night. It's not the greatest matchups of the week, but maybe an upset or two down the road. You never know.
Yeah, there's going to be one. The question, obviously, is which team is going to get upset. Because there's going to be, when you look at a week, it, man, on paper, this looks like a really uninteresting week. Well, those are the weeks where something happens, and something's going to happen. Though I would be, I cannot fathom Syracuse beating Clemson, especially with the way the Syracuse defense just got absolutely shredded last week by Maryland. I think, you know, the Iowa-Iowa State game is interesting. Iowa's ranked. Iowa State isn't. Stanford-UCF. UCF's ranked. Stanford isn't. Some quarterback controversy in a way at UCF with who's going to start. But, yeah, for the most part, I mean, you know, Pitt-Penn State are playing, which is cool to see because longtime rivals. But, yeah, I mean, again, on paper, this is an extremely uninteresting week.
Let's get started with Friday night. Number 20, Washington State at Houston. Intriguing in the fact that you've got the Dana Holgerson, Mike Leach matchup. Washington State's favorite on the road by 8.5.
Interesting game. Washington State, they've beaten up on two horrible teams in the first two games. An FCS school and a bad, bad Group of Five program. So how good is Washington State? We saw Houston play in the open when they beat when they lost to Oklahoma and got shredded. Washington State's not Oklahoma, so that to me is that's an enjoyable game, one to watch, and that could be one of those upsets because again, I don't know how good Washington State is, and Houston's offense is going to stress Washington State's defense. De'Aaron King is a legit, fun, dual-threat quarterback. And, yeah, that's a game where the ranked team could lose. Another interesting thing about Friday night, North Carolina's playing Wake Forest.
Yes.
And everybody's like, oh, that's an interesting early-season conference game. Well, except it's not a conference game. Those schools are about 90 miles apart, but they're not in the same division in the ACC. And they weren't scheduled to play this year, but it's a long-time rivalry. And I think they've signed a two-year deal where in the 2 years they're not matched up, they're going to play anyway, play in non-conference, because they know that both fan bases are going to go on the road because it's so close. And that's, you know, I think if you're an SEC fan, and frankly, if you're a longtime fan of any conference, you like traditional matchups. And no, Wake Forest, North Carolina is not a sexy matchup outside the league. But on Tobacco Road, that's a big deal game. And the fact that they weren't going to play irritated people. So the ADs, you got to give them credit, said, well, we're not scheduled to play, but we're going to play anyway.
He is Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. Very good. I'm listing this game for one reason and one reason only, and I want your opinion. Number 21, Maryland, is at Temple. Maryland is the top scoring offense in college football. They're favored by only 8.5 points, and that number keeps falling. Why?
I don't think people necessarily believe in Maryland yet. You know, the first week they blow out Howard, and you're like, 79 points against a bad FCS team. Well, Michael Loxley, that's a little bit Bush League running up the score. And then last week they blew Syracuse's doors off. They could have scored 80. I mean, they were going up and down the field, and Syracuse had no answer. But I still think there are people out there who are like, is this Maryland team really that good? And you know, Toledo, certainly not an offensive juggernaut, but they are a physical team, even with a new coach, Rod Carey, who used to be at Northern Illinois because Jeff Collins left for Georgia Tech. But I think it's a case of, okay, Maryland looked good last week, but come on, are they really that good? And the interesting thing about Maryland, Josh Jackson's their quarterback, a transfer from Virginia Tech, who's pretty good. They have some good skill position guys because DJ Durkin was a good recruiter. And Loxley comes in with a total fast-paced offense, and they have weapons on the outside, and they're using them. So, but I think that goes back to, wait a second here, is Maryland really that good? And I think people are saying, no, they're not. We'll find out more this week. But if Maryland plays like they did last week, they're winning by 21.
No question. Number 9, Florida at Kentucky. Kentucky loses their quarterback, Terry Wilson, for the season. But transfer Sawyer Smith, he was decent enough at Troy. This seems to be a game that goes one of two ways. Either Florida jumps out to a big lead and never relinquishes control, or Kentucky keeps this thing interesting and close for four quarters. Which way do you see it going?
Well, Florida's offensive line, they beat Miami in the opener, and then Miami turns around and loses to North Carolina, and North Carolina did the same thing Florida did. They had big plays in the passing game because Miami's secondary is not good. Their corners are bad, frankly, and their safeties, I don't know what they're doing. So, and then Florida last week beat UT Martin, big deal. Florida's offensive line remains a work in progress. Now, you look at Kentucky, they returned four starters on their defense, well, all four in their front seven. They lost their entire secondary. So presumably Florida's going to look to attack with the deep ball again. And Florida's got good receivers. The concern, if you're Florida, how good is Kentucky's front seven? Can they apply pressure without Josh Allen, who was the number four pick in the draft and now is playing for the Jags? So Kentucky's offense, Sawyer Smith, you're right. I mean, he's not a world beater, but he does have starting experience, and maybe the drop-off from him, from Wilson to him, won't be as bad as some people think. And they have a good wide receiver. Lynn Bowden is he's an all-SEC caliber guy in terms of talent level. But this one, to me, is all about Florida's running game. If Florida can't run, you know, struggles to run, if they're held to like 100 rushing yards, Kentucky could beat them for the second year in a row, and that's pretty amazing, considering Florida won 31 in a row before last year.
Wow. Michael Hugan of The Athletic, kind enough to join us. Alabama is at South Carolina. Crimson Tide favored by 25 in this thing. But the big storyline about the Crimson Tide is they're complaining that they're playing too many games in the heat in August and September, in early afternoons. Well, what's your comment to that?
Well, I think that every SEC team gets stuck with those noon games because they're playing dog opponents. And when you're Alabama playing New Mexico State, that's a dog. And maybe they, just like LSU fans, if you're playing a bad opponent, we'd much rather be at night. I guess, you know, fans don't want to sit in 90-degree weather anywhere. But at the same time, I think if I'm the SEC commissioner or one of the TV executives and Nick Saban's complaining about start times, or frankly any coach is complaining about start times, I think my answer would be, fine, we won't give you any TV money. You can play whenever you want. And every single AD, of course, would say, our coach needs to be quiet, keep sending us the money. So, but that just shows, you and I have talked about this for a decade, TV rules everything when it comes to start time. So you can complain all you want. You're not doing any good complaining. And, my presumption is maybe people in Alabama think, hey, Nick, if you complain, maybe they'll give us more night games. Well, if there are other teams playing in your league that day that have better matchups, no, you ain't playing at night.
Michael Hugan, The Athletic, well said. Oklahoma's at UCLA. Chip Kelly, they just can't seem to get it going on. The Sooners are a 23-point favorite in this thing. Any issues for the Sooners in this one?
No. Their only issue will be beating themselves, boredom. You watch UCLA play, their offense is bad.
Yeah.
It's bad. Chip Kelly is not the most demonstrative guy anyway. He's always been relatively stoic on the sidelines. I'm watching and I say stoic. Somebody else watches and says, man, that dude looks like he doesn't care that there's a football game going on right in front of him. And I think that would be a fair and apt description, because it doesn't look like he's fully engaged in what's going on. And he's never been a guy who cared for recruiting. Now, he cares about recruiting because he knows he needs big-time players. But at Oregon, they had some pretty good recruiters on his staff, and Nike was bringing out a new uniform every week, and Oregon was the cool program. Now, UCLA ain't the cool program. not even in its own city. So, you know, the first two recruiting classes under Kelly have not been very good. The 2020 class that he's putting together now, right now, 3 months before early signing period, is a bad one. So this might end up being a boondoggle. And if USC were to get rid of Helton, which is not a given anymore, they potentially could just blow UCLA off the map when it comes to recruiting. So unless UCLA turns it around quickly, and they ain't beating Oklahoma unless Jalen Hurts and half the team doesn't show up. So this game's on Fox, national broadcast. I think Fox, by about 9 o'clock, the announcers are going to be looking for something to talk about because the game ain't going to be close.
Michael, interesting matchup. Stanford at Central Florida.
Yeah, very interesting. Stanford last week looked horrible. USC just beat the heck out of them with a first-time true freshman starting quarterback. Stanford's known for being physical on both sides of the ball. We're going to run the ball down your throat, even though you know it's coming. And when we play defense, we're going to stymie your running game and get after your quarterback. Well, they can't do either one. Now, KJ Costello, their quarterback, is back. UCF's got more speed on the outside than Stanford does. So if Stanford can't stop UCF's running game, this could get UCF could win by two touchdowns. I live in Orlando. This is a gigantic deal for UCF fans because they're bringing in a Pac-12 program. They're not bringing in Oregon State. They're bringing in one of the teams that's been the best in the Pac-12 this century. But this is not a great Stanford team. I don't think UCF cares. The interesting thing about UCF, they have a quarterback controversy because Wimbush, the Notre Dame transfer, started in game one, and they liked the way he played. He did not play at all last week against FAU, with the response being, well, he's banged up a little bit. Well, no one seems to know what his injury is. Well, now Darryl Mack, the guy who started the bowl game against LSU, is fully healthy as well. So UCF has three quarterbacks who supposedly are healthy. So it's hard to keep three guys happy. So that will be interesting to see. But, yeah, again, if Stanford can't stop UCF from running the ball, UCF's going to take them to the woodshed.
Quickly, one last one. I guess it might be the best matchup. Iowa goes on the road against their rival Iowa State, and the Fighting Kirk Ferentzes are favored by 2.5.
Yeah, this is the children of the corn game, whatever you want to call it. And this, like a lot of interstate rivalries, is nastier than people think if you don't live in Iowa. But it's the cosmopolitan Iowa people versus the country bumpkin Iowa State people.
Yes.
This is a good game. Iowa State struggled in its opener to put away an FCS team. Then they had last week off to prepare for this game. Iowa's looked pretty good thus far. This one comes down, Iowa is not going to do anything fancy. Just like Stanford, we're going to line up, we're going to run the ball, and you're not going to be able to stop us. So this one, it's boring, but maybe it befits a game that's being played in Iowa, but it's all about stopping Iowa's run. If Iowa State does that well, Iowa State's going to win. I think Iowa State is going to win. I think Brock Purdy, the Iowa State quarterback, is going to make more plays in the passing game than Nate Stanley does, so I think Iowa State wins it. But that is one of the best games of the day, 4 o'clock on Fox Sports 1. Unlike the Fox game at night, this Fox Sports 1 game in the afternoon is worth watching.
Let's just get through this week. Next week we got some good games we can talk about, like Notre Dame at Georgia and et cetera,
and
et cetera.
Michael Hugan,
have a great rest of your week. We appreciate the time, my friend. Take care.
All right. Talk to you next week. Thanks, man.
Michael Huguenin, brought to you by Peterbilt of Louisiana, with offices in Lafayette, Lake Charles, Baton Rouge, and New Orleans. It's the envy of every truck driver. Peterbilt is the best because it's reliable, dependable, great resale value. It's the best on the road. When the Tigers travel, they travel with a Peterbilt truck. We'll be back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back. On this day in history, we go back to September the 11th, the year 2001. At 8:46 a.m., the North Tower of the World Trade Center in New York City was struck. At 9:03 a.m., the South Tower was struck. At 9:37 a.m., the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. was struck. At 9:59 a.m., the South Tower collapsed. And at 10:07 a.m., Flight 93 crashed in Pennsylvania. Al-Qaeda conducted terrorist attacks on the World Trade Centers in New York City, the Pentagon in Washington, D.C., by flying commercial planes into the buildings. A fourth plane crashed in rural Pennsylvania. The White House or the Capitol was the likely target. A day we will never, ever forget. A day that changed our lives and the way we live our lives forever. And it was ironic in that sports helped bring the country back together and unified in our fight against terrorism. On this day, September the 11th, the year 2001. If today is your birthday, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. Hope you have a great day with family, friends, loved ones, a little cake, a little ice cream, maybe even a present or two. You share your day with happy 52nd birthday to Harry Connick Jr. Happy 42nd birthday to Ludacris. Boy, he can sing. He can do it all. Act. He does everything. If it's your anniversary, happy anniversary from all of us to all of you. I hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. This number in, 27,000 beers sold at the home opener of the LSU game against Georgia State. 27,000. Multiply that by 8. Comes up to about $215,000 of revenue. Not too shabby. That's all the time we have for you today. Special thanks to Tony Barnhart, Chris Truex, John Hendricks, Mike Huguenin, to my producer extraordinaire, Clint Domain, to all of you for listening, and to our partners that make it possible each and every day. Come on back Thursday. We preview week 2 of the NFL with the Schwab and much, much more. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfer. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, this is KLWB Karen Crow Lafayette, 1037 The Game, a Delta Media station. Call Lafayette Roofing, 237-7663.
Give your family great TV.
Oh, that's nice.
For free. TV like Antenna TV. Tell them they can watch Antenna TV in 3 easy steps. Hook up your digital antenna. Use your digital tuner. Look for Antenna TV. Now they too can enjoy their favorite classic shows for free on Antenna TV.
Antenna TV Acadiana, over the air, channel 32.2.
You're in charge of hiring, and Indeed has solutions. Like company pages where you can get people excited about working for you. And we give you this toy monkey, which will bang its cymbals when the right resume appears. Okay, there is no monkey.
I said there is no monkey!
But company pages, for sure.
See why independent research by Silk Road shows Indeed delivers 3 times more hires than any other job site. Visit Indeed.com/promo to try company pages for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Have you heard? Proactive Plus is faster and better than ever. Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway, and you'll also receive free shipping. Do you have troubled skin? Acne? Well, we have great news. With Proactive Plus, your acne can heal, and you can help prevent new breakouts from happening. Don't miss this limited-time offer. Give us a call at 800-531-5691 because we're going to let a million people try Proactive Plus risk-free and get 2 free gifts and also receive free shipping when you call right now. You heard it. This offer won't last long. So call Proactive Plus now and you'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial of Proactive Plus, 2 free extras, and free shipping. Call 800-531-5691. This is our exclusive radio offer, never on TV. Get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactive Plus with free shipping. That's right, free shipping. Don't wait. Call 800-531-5691. That's 800-531-5691.
Time for your sports update. This is the 1037 The Game 2-Minute Drill.
What's the news?
After putting up over 30 runs in the previous two games, the Houston Astros allowed 21 runs last night in a loss to the Oakland A's. The final game of the series is tonight with first pitch set for 7:10, and you'll hear all the action on our sister station, The Rewind, 97.7 FM, 1330 AM, and 104.1 FM in Lake Charles. And it all starts with Astro launch at 6:35. The Astros are sending out Jose Urquidy, 1-1 with a 5.3 ERA, while the A's will be trotting out Brett Anderson, 11-9 with a 4.08 ERA. Congrats goes out to Will Lutz for being named NFC Special Teams Player of the Week earlier today after his game-winning field goal on Monday night against the Houston Texans. After the game, Lutz talked about how he felt like the field goal was good, but then the second it went off his foot.
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty confident in that kick. Like I said, our operation works so hard. You know, between Zach and Thomas, they make my job easy. And I told them after my first miss that I wasn't going to miss again, and I truly felt that wherever the ball was, I was going to give it a chance, and we were able to get it done.
The LSU Tigers are gearing up for Saturday when they host Northwestern State, and on Monday, Coach Ed Ogeron mentioned that this will be the Demons' red-letter game.
Every time you play LSU, it's going to be their red-letter game, and especially in Northwestern. They're going to play in Tiger Stadium, so they're going to play lights out. They're going to play their best ball, and I've been watching TV. I've seen a lot of upsets, and I had one against Troy, so nobody has to warn me again about this, so we're going to be ready. I promise you that. We're going to practice hard. Our team is going to be reminded of that.
Want to hear more from the head coach? Listening to the Ed Ogeron Show tonight at 8 o'clock right here on 103.7 The Game. For Acadiana's number one sports station, I'm Clint Dumming, and if you want more news, opinion, and on-demand audio, all you got to do is check out 103.7thegame.com.
Bring Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game along for the ride.
We go
wherever you go.
Everywhere.
With the 103.7 The Game mobile app.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy hump day to you. And it is a hump day Wednesday, 11th of September edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports, kicking off live on 103.7 The Game. For the next 2 hours, inside the 237 Roof Studio is presented by Lafayette Roofing. My name is Ben. His name is Clint. And we came to talk football. Hopefully, you're like-minded. Want to lead off with the LSU Tigers? We know this. Monday's show, LSU heavy, after they messed with Texas. Tuesday's show, Saints heavy, ditto with the Lone Star State. Let's get back to the Tigers. Some interesting, I don't know about revelations, but I think kind of inside the mind, if you will, of Ed Ogeron revealed during today's SEC teleconference. And for all of the bouquets that we're throwing at the Tigers' offense, we all are questioning the defense. How much should we question it? I think that's been one of the biggest question marks over the last 3.5 to 4 days. Was that defensive lack of production, was that outcome on defense simply a byproduct of a game that kind of got away from LSU in terms of tempo, pace, style, what have you? And I think had an interesting response on his D earlier today. I'm going to read it to you, and then we got some time to chop it up. Get involved with the show early. 706-0111. When asked if his offense needed to consider slowing the tempo, fickle fans and media, aren't we? I mean, for years it's been speed it up, get modern. Hey, now it's modern. Everyone says, are you sure you don't want to slow it down? But he was asked that, and the response from Ed Ogeron, asked if his offensive tempo needs to slow down to give the defense time to rest, his response, quote, you want to be able to maybe slow it down a little to give your defense a rest, but your defense has to stop them from scoring points. We knew we were in a shootout, so we felt like every time we had the ball in the second half, we had to score. That's what happened. Now, here's the important part as he closes out the quote. When we play great on defense, then we can slow it down. And I think that's a refreshing way to look at it. I do. because it complements this new style of offense that you've been cultivating all offseason long. Now that you finally are building this thing up and ramping it up stylistically on offense to where you not only look like everybody else, but in a lot of places you're better than everybody else because of your personnel and some of the continuity between play caller and quarterback, you don't want to rein that in unless your defense gives you the opportunity to. So people are saying, well, your offensive scheme forced defensive meltdowns. BS. I don't buy into that, at least not full tilt. I do agree with what Ogeron said earlier today and what I just read to you. When the defense plays great, then we can entertain the idea of slowing it down. Then the offense can pound away at the other defense, which will be tired because it's on the field for entirely too long. So that's been an interesting debate, I think, internally amongst LSU Nation for the last, as I said, 3.5 days or so. I don't know that he completely put it to bed there. My guess is this topic will come up again a few times during the regular season. But I will say, and I'm not one that often takes the, I guess, the hook in the mouth, right? Hook, line, and sinker just to do it. I was reeled in by that one. I think he's exactly right. I'll get you more from Ed Ogeron earlier today during the SEC teleconference. He was asked about Patrick Queen, and I'll say this before we get to the sound. Now I think, once you watch the way this young man from Livonia has performed the last 2 weeks, now I think we know why he was so highly touted coming into August.
Excellent. You know, as Patrick came here, he was a running back at Livonia. Patrick's got a great dad and mom, very close to him. He's a great young man, wants to do great, and you know, he was in a battle with Jacob, and I told him, I said, listen, everybody's going to play. Everybody's going to get their turn. And I'm telling you, when he's played, he's a difference. He's a playmaker. He's quick to the football, and he's getting better at linebacker every week.
When LSU needs to be sure-handed tackling against teams that run the football effectively, especially ones that don't always spread it out every single down, I think it's going to take Queen and Phillips, and that is the best combination they have. Damone Clark got in there here and there when the defense was gassed after some cramping went on. I think those are your best two in the middle. If you want to include Michael Divinity, that's fine. I still think his bread is best buttered on the outside when they can afford to have him play there. On the offensive side, Ogeron was asked about Stephon Sullivan. Bit of an enigma, right? He's been behind Thaddeus Moss when we were told that was a bit of a co-starter situation at tight end. Sullivan, the converted receiver, according to Coach O, still in the midst of a transition. He's not giving up on him yet.
Yeah, he's been doing fantastic. And we even talked about, hey, if we're not going to use him at tight end, play him at a receiver. He's an excellent player. We need to find a way to get him on the field and make plays. He's a great young man, very important to our program. I think as the season progresses, we're going to find the right spot for him.
Those are important topics about players of great import. CD, I don't think this next topic needs to be dragged out too much longer. I think the two this week that the horses are very far under the ground at this point, like we've taken the club and just beaten them down there. One would be Alabama playing at 11 a.m. and calling the ambulance over it.
Yep.
And then yesterday we ran it back with Gus Malzahn's nice swipe, backhanded style, at Roll Tide Nation. But the other one would be this locker room situation at UT. I'm hoping that this will finally put it to bed. My educated guess is that it won't. But Coach O, again, was asked about those locker room conditions. Cue up the band.
Well, as you know, Bob, we have, and I did not call Skip. I could have called him, but I did talk to somebody in Louisiana Tech staff, and they felt that it was very hot in there for them. So all I did was make sure that, as a precautionary measure, that we had air conditions and blowers. So we did have air conditioners and blowers going into the game. We put air conditioners and blowers. I don't know about air conditioners, but we definitely put blowers on the floors on Friday so we could have some ventilation. And we kept the doors closed. So Saturday when we got there, it was fine. I mean, it was a little stuffy in there. But as far as whether an air conditioner was on or not, I don't know. I was told there was none. So I took a precautionary measure of making sure that the locker room was fine for us, and that's all we did.
I mean, there are like three different levels of I'm done with this storyline or this person, and I'll give them to you. Locally, it's LSU, Texas, and the AC. Regionally, it's Bama and the 11 a.m. start. I think nationwide, it's Antonio Brown and whatever the hell he may or may not have done most lately. I just, there are certain things that, Clint, when you continue to get the same updates on your phone, when you continue to get the same things that scroll across your TV screen, it just makes you want to stop following sports for a little bit. So hopefully that's the last time we'll have it infiltrate your life on this show.
I have to agree with you, especially with the Antonio Brown stuff. It's gotten ridiculous. It was like Saturday morning when I was doing Under the Dome. It was like, okay, easy last segment of the show. Just kind of break down what's going on with Antonio Brown. He'd be like, get this dude off the team. And right at 11 o'clock, they announce he's off the team. It's like, what the hell?
And naturally, look, I'm sensitive to the fact that accusations of sexual assault is a horse of a very, very different color. And I'm going to go ahead and stay, about 3 million miles away from that topic on this program. It's just not going to serve anybody anything. Are they valid? Don't know. Wasn't there. Not part of the legal process. Don't really care, to be completely honest with you. I just hope everybody's safety and well-being are being addressed. But, man, there are just certain people who I need them out of the media, out of the press. And these things turning into local, regional, and national levels of the Kardashians, I just don't need it in my life. Now, I did want to at least address the Houston Astros CD. I don't know that we've seen anything this topsy-turvy in terms of blowouts. Going one direction, the wind blows, it goes in the other. The Astros won on, let's see here, Monday?
Oh, yeah.
And I'll back it up. Sunday and Monday night by a combined 36-1. I understand that those were against two different teams. Still, 36-1. And then last night, they get beat 3 touchdowns to 1. 21-7, your final score. And Wade Miley, oh boy, didn't go well for him. So those Oakland A's, they took a lot of umbrage. 16 was hung on them the night before, and they put up 21 on the Astros last night. Have we ever seen anything quite like it? I'm not asking you to be the Elias Sports Bureau, but what the hell is that?
Not in terms of a three-game spread of games, because usually it happens game one, you'll put up a lot of runs, let's say 15, 16 runs, and then the next day you can't hit a whole lot of runs. It's usually like two or three you hit the next day, and you kind of have a little bit of a offensive, lack of a better term, offense just doesn't have that firepower like it did the night before.
We'll call it a lull.
A lull. There we go. Couldn't think of the word.
And
there.
I just, you know, I don't know that I've ever quite seen it like this.
I don't think it's ever happened.
I had Astros fanatic buddies that were texting me after the two straight nights of onslaught and said, save some of these runs for the playoffs. Well, they put up 7 last night and got absolutely blitzed. So here's the drill. We got 2 hours with you today from 6 until 8 p.m. on Acadiana Sports Station. It'll be 5 Guys, Stories, and Lies, followed by the Coach O Show, 8 until 9. But if you want to figure out which way this thing goes with the Astros, tonight against the A's, it's the third of a 4-game set. You'll have to listen to our sister station. That's the Rewind, 97.7 FM, 1330 AM in Lafayette, 104.1 in Lake Chuck. Brett Anderson versus Jose Urquidy, 6:35 the pregame show, 7:10 your first pitch. Somebody's going to put up 20 runs. I think that's all we know. Who's it going to be? You got to listen to find out. What's our sink or swim question going to be? On the other side of this break, you'll find that out as well. And then Cousin Dino, Spreadheads at 4:30. James Moran of Tiger Rag Magazine talking LSU football at 5:05. Don't go anywhere. We're just getting started on a hump day. You've got Bumper to Bumper Sports coming right back on 103.7 The Game.